Welcome to the Payment Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack, and on today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at the customer experience and the rise of challenger banks. And so to help me with today's episode, I have Eric Brandt, who is the Senior Market Analyst at NCR Corporation, and Aaron McPherson, who is the VP of Research Operations at Mercator Advisor Group. Now, there's certainly a lot to unpack during this episode, so without any further delay, let's start the show.
So, Aaron and Eric, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. Now, Eric, if I could start with you for our first question here today. Now, what are the 2019 takeaways from these digital and challenger banks? And also, what do you think that our listeners should be looking out for in 2020?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. So, I think to start with the 2019 takeaways, I think we saw quite a few different companies entering the financial services space, announcements such as Google, the Apple Card. You know, there's been some rumblings of Amazon, Uber Money, and that kind of stuff. So I think we're seeing a lot of different of the big tech companies kind of enter the space, but then also the actual challenger banks, traditional financial institutions creating their digital-only brands, some matching the traditional brands, some launching brand new banks, really kind of started to take flight, and you're seeing a lot more of those. And at the same time, you're also seeing some of them shut down. So 2019 as a whole was kind of covered the entire gamut. For 2020, I really think we're really going to see these take off. The ones that are doing it right, I think we're going to watch rise to the top. And what I mean by doing it right is I don't think these traditional banks can just create a digital-only bank and people are going to come flock to it. I think they have to provide different value. They have to give a reason for these people to come and join their bank and not just do it because it's a digital-only brand. But I also think you're going to see these big tech companies continue to emerge, and you're going to see those really start to gain traction. It's a big data play for a lot of them, and they know how to utilize the data. I think something that a lot of financial institutions struggle to do. So when you think about like Google, how well they're able to use that data, and then they just kind of partnered with PayPal, or Honey. And so you're going to see them really be able to monetize that data and provide that. And so banks are going to have to get better about that as well if they want these digital-only challenger banks to be successful in 2020.
Yeah, I was just reviewing our Outlook document for 2020, and one of the big themes we have in there is the rise of virtualization. So we have studying something we call banking as a service, which is something that some of the legacy prepaid platform providers like Green Dot or Blackhawk or Galileo are providing, because a lot of these challenger banks are basically virtual brands. There's no physical assets. You know, it's just really trade dress, a website, and policies, and all of the work's going on through an outsourced platform. And we've seen some banks like BBVA do this sort of thing. But it's becoming more mainstream, and I think it's being accelerated as well by the open banking regulations in the European Union, which have enabled these challenger banks to gain traction and grow rapidly to the point where now they're looking to expand into the United States. So while we don't have an open banking rule here, we have a lot of APIs and platforms that they can leverage, and that's what's making this a big deal for 2020.
Yep, I absolutely agree.
Excellent. So just kind of shifting gears a little bit here, obviously a big thing that's going to come into play is obviously gig workers here in the year 2020. In fact, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they forecast that in 2020, gig workers will constitute 43% of the U.S. workforce, up from 35% the year prior. And we've noted the payments and finance needs of gig workers are kind of similar to those of small business owners. So, Eric, I'd love it if we could start with you. Do you feel that these markets are underserved by traditional banks? And also, what types of payments and finance tools are small business owners and gig workers looking for in 2020, and who do you see providing those?
Yeah, so a couple things on that. So the first thing is, are these markets underserved by traditional banks? Not to rip on the banks too much, but small businesses as a whole are, I would say, largely underserved by traditional banks. So gig workers are absolutely underserved by the traditional banks. And I think it's going to be a while before they catch up. But as Aaron alluded to, with open banking, API platforms, those kind of things, I do think that they will be able to catch up faster than maybe we have been in the past. But Uber Money, I think, is a great example. They took they saw the problem, they saw the need of their drivers, they opened the debit card, and they're providing their money almost instantaneously and not bypassing the bank, but more or less bypassing the bank. And so banks have to find niches like that to help serve some of these gig economies. You have people that freelance and all that kind of stuff, Venmo, PayPal, that's how they're getting paid. And the banks are not seeing those deposits. People are carrying large balances in their Venmo accounts and those kind of things. And so I think, you know, Zelle is there to combat that a little bit, but I definitely think traditional banks have a way to come or a long way to come to kind of help serve those gig workers, especially, but even the small business bankers, a lot of them are stuck in a retail system where they're stuck in a big corporate banking system, and it's just way over cumbersome. And so I think we're seeing a lot of traction in the small business market, cash flow predictions, automated reporting, some of those types of features that are really kind of helping make those business banking tasks easier, especially from the mobile device. But I think we're going to see, I think the traditional banks are going to continue to make progress towards that. But I do think some of the tech companies and some of these other outside companies are going to continue to better serve those gig workers quickly than they have in the past.
Yeah, I think one very important thing that's going on is the evolution of faster payment systems in the United States. So we've got same-day ACH now, which is being relied on by most of the P2P networks like Venmo or PayPal or Zelle. And those, you know, as I said before, with virtualization, those platforms are being exposed via open APIs. And so more and more companies like Uber are able to integrate into that and provide these sorts of services. And, you know, traditional financial institutions are getting in on the game too. We just saw a report that Google is going to be offering checking accounts in partnership with banks. So one term that we use around here that I kind of like is the term arms merchant. So it's a particular type of bank, traditionally the Bancorp bank or, you know, some of these, but increasingly, you know, Green Dot Bank and things like that, that actually enable non-banks to get into banking and payment services. So in the Google case, the reports are that they're working with Citigroup and Stanford Federal Credit Union. So Citigroup's about as legacy and traditional as they come, but clearly they see this as a major opportunity to leverage their platform to enable a non-bank, Google, to use banking services, and, you know, they generate some nice fee revenue from that. So if you have the scale that you see yourself as more of a platform and less of a, you know, brick and mortar branches type bank or both, I think there's opportunities for banks here too, which is what makes it so interesting. You've really got, I think the banks in the middle are the ones that are really in trouble because they're getting squeezed by the challenger banks and they're getting squeezed by the big banks.
Yeah, I would totally agree with what you said on those banks that are kind of in the middle. And I do think that part of the banks that to better serve these is utilizing this data and recognizing their accounts and who might be a gig worker, who might kind of have a side business and those kind of things, and helping provide the tools to better serve them as well.
Yeah, I would add there's nothing stopping mid-range financial institutions from engaging in this. They can take advantage of platforms just as much as anybody else, but it does require a rethink of what the business is and what, you know, what the strategy is.
Yep, absolutely.
Excellent. Now, I'd like to get to, you know, kind of back to the data part, if we will, here. So, Eric, you had pointed out, you know, kind of the PayPal and Honey acquisition there, and really kind of just that the importance of how it is that they're going to be able to leverage the user data that they have and be able to monetize that. And they've kind of really built systems around that to be able to do that. But if we kind of take a look at the banking side of things, you know, traditionally banking technology has historically operated in siloed channels where the legacy systems held data like member profiles without sharing them across the organizations. And typically, you know, that can obviously result in an unpersonalized banking experience where each banking, and I'm using quotes here, channel provided a separate customer experience. So what I'd really love to get a better handle on is, you know, how have APIs and the digital first approach streamlined consumer banking experience?
Yeah, so a couple of different things on this to kind of go back to Aaron's point with some of these regional sized banks and kind of the no man's land that they can find themselves in. This is especially important for them, I think, because they're competing against the too big to fail banks, but they're too large to have that intimate knowledge. I know Ryan when you walk in the door because I know who you are. And so they have to find a way to do the personalization, but then compete again with the big banks. So I think this is especially important for them. And there's platforms out there that are really kind of API driven that allow them to kind of do this. But I think it's vital as more and more branches close. We know the branch is still very important, but as the physical gets less and less, we're having more and more touch points, which you would think, okay, yeah, that's great. That provides more opportunity for us to cross-sell. But it's not just cross-selling. It's really, regardless of the touch point, I know who you are. I know who you are, Ryan. I know who you are, Eric. I know what you're looking for. One example that I think would be great or I'd like to use is, hey, we know that you get paid every other Friday. We know that you check your account between 8 and 9:30. Maybe let's just simplify this experience a little bit on Friday and say, here's, congratulations, you got a big deposit. Here's your current balance. That is a simple kind of example, but I think that kind of goes to showing we know how you use the platform. We know how you are going to interact with your digital banking app at this moment. So let's kind of surface that up. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, but then again, as you mentioned, the PayPal and Honey, why do we love the Amazon experience? The UI UX on Amazon, I would think most people agree, isn't that great? But it's that you know what I'm looking for. You provide me these recommendations on products that you think I might like. And so it's banks kind of using that as these non-traditional providers continue to come in and kind of set that user experience. Banks can really utilize these APIs and kind of not fast follow, but for lack of a better term, fast follow to improve that experience faster than ever before.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, as I was saying, this virtualization use of APIs really enables you to, you know, disaggregate the banking function so everybody can focus on where they're strongest. So there may be some banks that want to focus on face-to-face customer experience and operate branches, but then they don't necessarily need to operate their own systems. They can use a platform, sort of a shared environment. One of the things we're seeing increasingly is adoption of cloud payments. So traditionally, that was not something that banks were willing to do, is to actually operate payment systems in the cloud. But ACI Worldwide announced that their whole stack is going to be available in the cloud. So I think it's getting easier and easier for businesses to specialize and become superior in particular areas rather than having to do everything. So you could say it's sort of horizontal integration. Like one organization might operate a system of branches. One organization might operate a consortia fraud database. You know, one organization might be focused on marketing and rewards. Yeah, so, you know, this is scary, obviously, but also, you know, as we've been saying, opportunity as well. What I don't think is going to happen is the ability to just continue to do business as usual.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think the banks that do banking as traditional, as, you know, bank or business as usual, like you said, are going to struggle mightily. And I think it's kind of interesting too. I'm sure you guys have seen it as well, but we're actually seeing quite a few banks, if they're not doing core conversions, are at least evaluating the potential to do a core conversion, which, I mean, it was almost unheard of just a couple of years ago, let alone 5 or 10 years ago. And I think a big part of that is getting all the data, getting clean data that can be used across the different silos, across the different touch points, kind of like you said. And so I only think data is going to become more and more important. It's definitely not going away. It's just, it's not how big can it get, but how well can we really utilize it without, of course, without getting too creepy too. you can definitely get too creepy with it for sure.
Yes.
You know, certainly. And I think kind of taking a look at just, you know, everything we're talking about today, it really kind of just boils down to that, you know, the customer experience, right? Kind of everything that we're doing between the APIs and everything else and the data collection, everything is really to drive home that better customer experience. So for the last few questions, I really like to focus around that. So for the first one here, you know, for Eric, from your standpoint, how have expectations for consumer experience changed over the last years? And how will customer experience continue to evolve in 2020? And if we could dovetail that into, has the customer experience won out as a top priority for retail banks?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think customer experience has changed a lot over the last decade, if you really look at it. But even in 2019, over the past year and stuff, evolving technology, we're seeing more technology built into the devices that we have in our hands all the time. And so the customer experience has to follow those technologies. So I really think that banks are having to keep up with those, facial identification. It wasn't too long ago we were doing PIN numbers compared to these long passwords. It's a couple of those kind of things. And so I think the introduction of services such as the Apple Card and Uber Money are good examples of these. I mean, the Apple Card really kind of set the standard for what an account opening experience should look like. And so I think that, you know, they've kind of set the standard for that. And that's going to be not difficult, but important that financial institutions keep up with those type of experiences as well. And then, you know, I think the good news is banks really have trust equity that some of these tech providers lack, especially as we see different data breaches and that kind of stuff. So while it isn't enough to forgive a really poor digital experience, it does put the financial institutions back in the ring if they are able to really increase those customer experience, those digital offerings. And I do think that banks and credit unions are also going to have to find a way to strike a delicate balance between convenience and security. More than 75% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck, so they're not going to tolerate any sort of risk when it comes to their money. But these same people also all have iPhones or smart devices, are keeping up with the latest technology. And so they want that security, but they also want to have those digitally optimized experiences. And so I think for the banks and credit unions, it really just comes back to delivering a superior digital experience using rapid innovation, but also, you know, keeping security at the forefront for their users as well.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would add to that is, you know, I hear too from a lot of the banks we talk to that customer service is their primary objective. But I think also one thing that they have that's a real core competency is trust and security. And we continue to see that too in our consumer surveys. The banks and credit unions continue to be more trusted than fintechs and challenger banks. So I think that's also a priority for the banks we talk to, is to maintain that and possibly at the expense of customer experience. I think there's a perception that some of these fintechs have prioritized customer experience at the expense of safety. And then when they scale up to a certain level, suddenly that catches up with them, because the fraudsters who previously hadn't shown themselves are now attacking, and they're simply not equipped to deal with it. So there may be a change in younger generations about that. But on the other hand, they're perhaps not doing things that are that risky yet. And the challenger banks are not that large. So I would just caution about, you know, going too far down that path, because, you know, it's a hard-won reputation is easily broken by a breach or something like that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think you said it a little bit better than what I was trying to articulate there. But I agree with you. As willing as they are to switch for a better customer experience, they will just as quickly switch if their data is compromised. And so I think that's especially important. You know, but then, like we talked about it, you know, a little bit ago, the financial institutions can't also rest on their laurels of the way they've kind of done things. So they're definitely in between a rock and a hard place, if you will, on those kind of,
yeah, absolutely,
on the convenience. And the convenience versus the trust and the safety, for sure.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Eric and Aaron, for taking the time today for speaking to me about customer expectations and the rise of the challenger banks. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Great.